think I was counting back to when you were appointed to the bench. It's 11 years, I think?
It's almost 12. It was. I was appointed in January of 2005.
And so why retire now?
Because I can. I'm 60 years old. I'm still healthy. I got a lot of things I like to do and that I want to do. And I want to retire while I can still do them. And I also think it's a good idea for judges to retire while they're still doing a good job, before, you know, it becomes... It takes some energy to treat the job like every case is important, which it is, and I think it's good to retire before you lose that.
Before the burnout and or the complacency starts setting in?
Yeah, I think that's right. And I am going to continue to work some. I've already committed to a day a month to do the early resolution project. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but I can explain it. There's an attorney with the court system in Anchorage who helps identify cases, Juno divorce and custody cases, where the parties don't have lawyers and it looks like they might be able to settle with a little help. And so with the help of Alaska Legal Services, they recruit volunteer lawyers to work with these folks for the day. And then the judge, a judge oversees it. And if they reach a settlement, the judge puts it on the record and just clarifies it, and they can get their case resolved that day. If they don't reach a settlement, the judge can work with them, and in addition to what the lawyers have already done, work with them and try to reach a settlement. And it's been very successful and really helpful to people to get their cases resolved quickly.
It almost sounds like family law mediation in a way.
That's exactly what it is. And there are both volunteer lawyers and mediators that work with the parties and help them move the case forward, because if they don't settle, it takes many, many months to get on the judge's calendar and have a trial, and then that's often not what's best for them or their children.
Anything else? Are you going to maybe get back into practicing, or you have any other plans, or is it kind of retirement mode here?
Yeah. Well, I have to choose between remaining as a senior judge or practicing law. I can't do both. And for now, I'm going to remain as a senior judge, so I'll do that. I may be asked to fill in other places occasionally where they need help. You know, if another judge is retiring, or there's a gap between, you know, the appointment of a new judge and the existing judge leaving.
Outside of the court and the law, what do you have plans on doing? Anything, any personal plans?
Yeah. Well, you know, the way I'm thinking of it is I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing now, only a different balance. So I'll have a lot more time with my wife, my kids, my 8 grandkids, all of whom were born since I was appointed. I love trail running. I'll have more time to get out in the mountains and run while I'm still healthy enough to do it. And you asked why now, and that's one of the reasons. You know, how much longer none of us knows how much longer we have to do these things, and then my wife and I want to do some travel, and frankly just get up and have coffee in the morning before and not have to run out the door and just have more time for that.
Your knee's still good?
My knees are good. I've been very, very fortunate in a huge number of ways in my life, and one of which is healthy joints. I'm still able to get out and run the ridges. I like to go. We go to Haines a lot, and was up there this weekend and ran up Mount Rapinski and the ridge to Peak 3920. And you know, it's just something that 10 or 15 years from now, I don't know if I'll be able to do that. So I'm real happy to be out there doing it.
Back to the job. I mean, how many hours a day have you been spending on this job over the last nearly 12 years?
Well, I would say when I started, it was probably like 9 or 10 hours a day. And over time, a couple of things have changed. I mean, one, you become more familiar with things and it doesn't require as much time. The other is, frankly, with the appointment of Judge Nave, we've been able to share the workload in a good way. And that's made life easier.
Of course, you know about the budget cuts that have been ongoing, and also, you know, kind of sort of the preemptive measures with Justice Stowers, you know, directing the court system to, you know, take a 3.5% cut, at least a 3.5%, you know, last year and also this year. What kind of an effect has that had on your job as far as being efficient or either morale of your colleagues and other staff members in the courthouse?
Yeah. Well, I think the hardest impact has been on the clerk's office, where, you know, not just fewer hours and a pay cut, but also not filling positions means that you have fewer people doing the work that used to be handled by a lot more people, and it is really difficult. And they work incredibly hard, and they're very skilled, but it is a challenge. So that's one effect. Having the court closed a half a day a week, you know, in some ways for judges, it's a little bit nice because you have some quiet time to get your work done, you know, motions and things that you don't often have time to do during the workday because there's so many interruptions. But it also means there's less time to schedule hearings, and I'm seeing the impact of that. It means that things take longer to get on the calendar, and the public's going to be seeing that soon too, I think.
Any sort of adverse impacts beyond that as far as delayed justice or delayed resolution in some cases?
We're doing the best we can. I think that part of it too is that other agencies have had their budgets cut. So for example, the district attorney's office has one less attorney, they have fewer staff, they have to prioritize what cases they're filing. So many things which previously would have been charged may not be getting charged now. I've seen things like that. We have a constitutional or a statutory deadline for criminal cases, so we can't delay them beyond those deadlines, but it makes it harder for everybody involved, the judges and the lawyers and the litigants.
A few years ago, you talked to me at length about the value of the therapeutic court program and how that kind of requires a little bit more of front-end resources, extra resources, but it has benefits in the long term. Do you still agree with that assessment?
Yeah. It's one of the things I'm most proud of. When I first started in 2005, we were just establishing the therapeutic court, which started as an alcohol court, and Judge Nave has taken that over, and it's now an alcohol and drug court. I think it's very effective, it's very important. And the reason I passed that on to him was I started the mental health court, which is also known as the Coordinated Resources Project, and it's a similar kind of program, but for helping people who would benefit from mental health treatment. And we've been doing that for about 5 years now and have had, I think, quite a bit of success. And that kind of problem-solving justice I have learned to incorporate into everyday cases as well, to the extent that I can. And I think it's of tremendous benefit to people involved. Most people who are charged with crimes, a substantial majority, have issues with alcohol and or substance abuse. And if you don't address those things, you're not, all you're focusing on is punishment, and you're not really doing anything to help them not come back into the system. And I think the most important thing we as judges can do is to try to figure out why they are here, what is getting them here, what services we can provide to help them stay out of trouble.
How confident, though, are you, in light of the current budget situation, that you're going to continue to get financial support from the other two branches of government to continue with that, with those programs in the future?
Well, I think in theory, that's the whole idea. You know, I think you're a little bit referring to SB 91, which is the bill that dramatically overhauled criminal justice in Alaska. And a lot of what that bill was about is assessing which defendants are at high risk for recidivism and which aren't, and dealing with them appropriately. So people who are low risk, you probably should be spending less time in jail, and people who are higher risk for repeat offenses, we should be addressing their issues that causes them to be high risk. And that's exactly what the therapeutic courts, the problem-solving courts, do. We do an assessment that looks at those factors and says, okay, here's a person who is at high risk for repeat offense. The community will benefit the most by getting those folks treatment and helping them avoid coming back into the system.
Overall, what's your view of that bill as far as what it was proposed coming out of the Criminal Justice Reform Commission and how it was eventually implemented and then signed into law? Does it follow pretty closely, or are there some differences there that you have some issues with?
You know, I didn't work with the commission that made the initial recommendations. I don't know how much it changed from that. I think the goals are good. I think there are quirks and things that are going to have to be worked out over time, you know, as things that it was enacted fairly quickly, and there's things that may be unintended consequences, but I think there's time to fix those things and work with them.
Can you give me an example of some of those unintended consequences, are you seeing some of those right now?
You know, here's a small thing. There's the offense of driving when your license is suspended or revoked. And then there's the offense of driving without a license. Driving suspended or revoked was previously treated very seriously, carried mandatory minimums for a first offense, 10 days suspended, after that mandatory jail, mandatory work service. And the legislature reduced that to a violation. It's not even a criminal offense anymore. It's just punishable by a fine, unless you're driving while your license was suspended because of a DUI. But they didn't amend the law, I think inadvertently, which makes it a crime to drive without a license. And so as a consequence, right now, driving without a license is a misdemeanor punishable by up to 90 days in jail. Driving when your license is suspended or revoked is a violation only punishable by a fine. So it's just I think that was just a mistake, and I think that'll be fixed.
Any other things that you're seeing coming up in your courtroom now? I realize it's only been a few months since the law went into effect, but anything else that's come out of that bill?
Well, one of the things that's happened is that it's had a kind of a side effect on the problem-solving courts in a way, because some of the people, particularly in the mental health court, that we see are mostly doing fairly low-level offenses. The problem is they're repeat offenders. They come back regularly for minor theft or criminal trespass, and they would benefit from treatment. But getting into the program means making a commitment to 6 months or a year or longer, and it used to be that the incentive for that was they could face significant amount of jail that would motivate them to say, okay, I'm going to do this. And now, because of the reduction in the maximum sentences, they're not facing so much jail, so it's a little bit less of a motivator. And I think what's good is that still people are willing to come into the program because they recognize that even though it might be easier to spend a few days in jail, that they will benefit from the treatment that we can offer. And so I'm hoping that that takes hold.
There is what I understand as an intended second phase or follow-up bill to Senate Bill 91, in which the potential savings from the first measure would get plowed into rehabilitation and treatment programs. How confident are you that that's actually going to happen?
those are beyond my pay grade. I mean, those are decisions made by the legislature. I certainly hope that's what happens, because that's the whole point. If you save money by having people spend less time in jail, you should be using that money to provide treatment and other services to help people avoid being committing new offenses. And I don't know what, it's impossible to know what a legislature is going to do down the road, but I really hope that's what happens.
A lot has been made about the reasons behind recidivism in the state, and part of it is to substance and drug abuse. And there's also been pointed out that people of color, natives, Alaska natives, also are incarcerated more often, more frequently than those who are white or other ethnic groups. Do you see any sort of bias in the Alaska criminal justice system at all?
I don't believe there is any overt or conscious bias. There's been a lot of talk about implicit bias, and we judges have had training on that, and I think that is a fact. In other words, that biases that don't rise to the level of consciousness. And I think, you know, good judges work to be judges, lawyers, prosecutors, police officers, everybody involved in the system. If you're aware of that, you can work to have that not determine what you're doing. But I don't think there's overt bias, not in the court system.
In your nearly 12 years on the bench here, what has been the most interesting or challenging case that you dealt with?
You know, I would be very reluctant to talk about any specific case. I really, this job is interesting every day. It really is. it is. I mean, you're dealing with people's lives. You're dealing with people at their most vulnerable. And a good judge works hard to care about every single case. But it would be inappropriate for me to just single out a case and talk about something specific because it's somebody's, you know, it's somebody's life, and it's not appropriate for me to talk about that.
I just recall, you know, several times where you're up there on the bench and, you know, something has gone really off the rails and you just kind of close your eyes and just kind of bite your tongue.
That happens, yes. That's true. A senior judge taught me a trick. Sometimes funny things happen in the courtroom, and, you know, it's... The judge is responsible for the tone in the courtroom, and I learned early on that you have to be very careful about humor in the courtroom because what seems funny is hurtful to somebody else, and so you can't exhibit that on the bench.
Any sort of advice or recommendations for your successor here in this office?
You know, I've been thinking a lot about leaving this job and how lucky I have been in so many ways. I mean, lucky to get the job, lucky to work with really good and capable lawyers in Juneau and in Southeast, lucky to be supported by colleagues who are just incredible. The other judges, you know, if you need help with something or whatever, they're always there. And I guess I just... It's important, I think, as a new judge to recognize that any number of people could do this job, you know, and be really good at it. And the advice is don't become complacent about that and don't think you're particularly special because you were the one lucky enough to get the job. And, you know, there were 10 applicants for this position. It was very pleasing to me because... really very skilled and experienced attorneys that were interested in this job. As I say, you know, the judicial council could only send three names to the governor, but any one of those people could have done this job. And of the three people whose names were sent, only one of them is going to get it. And it's important that they just recognize that there's a little bit of luck involved. It's not just that they're somehow special.
You may remember earlier this year, the Juneau Bar Association, they had an issue with the potential appointment to the Alaska Supreme Court, specifically one of your colleagues in this building, possibly not getting picked for the open spot on the bench because, and that, assume, would lose a little bit of geographic representation on the bench. At the same time, there were others on the other side who complained that there is not enough gender or ethnic diversity in the Alaska court system. What's your view about that?
Well, in terms of my position, you know, I mean, the first point is the governor should appoint the most qualified person. That's what should happen. I would say to the governor, though, if all other things are equal and you have a choice between, he has a choice between three candidates, diversity is important. It is. And so if everything else is equal, I think appointing a woman in this case is important because there's only been one woman on the bench. You know, I'm excluding magistrate judges now, but just among judges, there's only been one on the bench in Southeast Alaska ever, Judge Collins. Number of times a year, I bring students into the courtroom, and I think it's important for young girls to look up and see that, you know, I could be a judge too. And so, I'm not saying that the appointment should go to somebody because they're a woman, but I'm saying all other things being equal, that kind of diversity is important. And I think the community benefits from that.
Do you have any pending cases still unresolved that you're going to be working on here on the last day of October?
I do. I'm trying to get everything done so I don't dump anything on Judge Knave. And in the end, you know, I'm already seeing motions that are being filed that I'm not going to, they won't be resolved before I leave. And so they're going to fall on somebody else. And unfortunately, there probably will be a gap between when I leave and the next judge starts, and you know, I'm sure that Judge Knave will make it work somehow.
Are you looking forward to getting your social life back?
You know, my social life, some judges are appointed and it's difficult because their social life revolves around the legal community. I have a very large family in Juneau, and so my social life pretty much revolves around that. What I'm looking forward to is spending more time with my grandkids. And, you know, when I started in 2005, I didn't have any. I now have 8 grandchildren. It's incredible. And I'm looking forward to spending some time with them. Yeah, it'll be great.
There's a lot made that once you get appointed to the bench, you have to start cutting off your contacts and your relationships with other people just to maintain that semblance of impartiality.
You know, that's true to a point. I think it's important for judges to still be part of the community and do things, and I have been able to do that. A judge can't do pro bono legal work, which I used to do a lot of, and that's important. But I continue to do things, other things that are important to me, you know, one of which is I involve the running community. I direct the Nifty 50 race that's run in August each year, and so you know, it's a judge doesn't have to be a monk. You don't have to separate yourself from the community, and I think it's important, especially in a place like Juneau, where you know we all know each other, and I can't walk down the street without running into people that I've seen in court. It's important that we be out there in the community and just, you know, be participants in the community.